Hey, kids. Speaking of kids, our little kid is growing up. Here we are. This podcast is turning a piping hot 13 years old. If you had told us 13 years ago that in 13 years we were still going to be casting pod, we'd probably have asked what you were smoking and why you weren't sharing any of it with us. So now that SML's a teenager, I think there are a few things that are worth mentioning. See, when a mama podcast and a daddy podcast really like each other, they share a special hug. And then they start investing in leather bits and bobs and... Hey, hold on one damn minute. I didn't sign up for any of this fiddler on the roof sunrise sunset crap. Are you kidding me? Sure, fine. Get all weepy and shit and go boo-hoo-hooing to your Tumblr or LiveJournal account and share with the rest of your friends how emotionally meaningful this milestone is. And hey, I'm not done talking yet. Quit fading me out, you assholes. Quit fading me or I'm going to come out there and show you what fading's all about. Bend you over the back of a chair and...
This show is lit, and dicks are wet. This podcast is the bomb. SML's finally turning 13, just in time to bring out the
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a big, fun episode lined up. We have a whole bunch of people hanging out because today, on the dot, February 3rd, is our 13th anniversary. Aki is here. Ryan Niemiller is here. Bree's here. Chris here. Jacob's here. And Andy Sperry is here. How is everybody doing?
Yay!
Doing great, dude.
Yeah, that Yay. Sums it up. Yay!
Yay!
That's unbelievable!
That is unbelievable. Well, yeah, welcome in. How's everybody doing? I'm glad everyone's here. You've all been a big part of this show for a number of years, all of you. And I want to let you all know that I quit and Jacob's in charge right now.
I believe it.
All right. Well, we are officially moving over to discuss Disney Dreamlight Valley, which is great because new news got dropped today.
Jesus, no.
I hate it.
Oh, yeah. I hate Lady it. And the Tramp coming February 11th.
Someone forgets that Tuesdays are not news
days. It's not news days.
I'm freaking aware, but you know what? You made me in charge of the podcast, so
yeah. I'm spicing things up.
I'm hitting the ground running. I hit the ground running with the news, so what else do you want?
This is your fault, Joe. I blame you 100%.
That's fair. I'll take it. I deserve it.
13 is an unlucky number.
What?
You know?
Is it?
I don't know. Some say that.
Allegedly. A lot of old buildings don't have a 13th floor.
Mm-hmm. Four is a worse number.
Cursed.
Now, when you're staying at the Gaylord and you're on floor 14, you know where you are.
Yeah, but like it has its own legitimate fear. It has a name. It's called Triskaidekaphobia. That's fear of the number 13. It's a real thing.
Hmm.
I thought it was the fear of those crackers.
Yeah, I heard Triskaids, and now I'm hungry.
And I'm really sorry, but there's very few opportunities in life to bring out that little bit of trivia I have. So
honestly, it shouldn't even be based on that specific date. It should be based on any date that's superstitious of bad, because not every culture has 13. Other cultures, it's a different number. Why make a word for every last one of them when one word can encompass all of them and make life so much easier?
Because
like for China, it would be the number 4. Because the number 4 and the word for death are either the same or very similar, something like that. I can't remember what anymore.
It's like Jacob. There's so many words you could use to describe Jacob, but wiener, just perfect.
Dipshit, I think, is probably better. Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of languages with words that are like really close to each other. Like in sign language, the difference between thirsty and sex is really close to each other.
Well, if you're... That's because thirsty is the same thing. It's been a while since I've used sign language. I really need to go study up on that again.
Andy, how have you been? How's things going on your end?
I'm
trying to figure out what the sign language is for thirsty and sex now. So
shockingly, I've never used sign language. I don't know why you want to bring that up.
Ryan, is there a reason you've... to be fair... You could if you wanted. You could get some words down if you wanted.
Probably I could, but the reason I don't know sign language is that I hate handicapped people. That's probably the biggest reason.
You heard it.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah. Because they always try to take my good parking.
Oh my God. You're a menace.
And the good bathrooms,
Ryan.
Too. They got those oversized bathrooms, too. Those are the best.
Yeah, it's nice.
I use them. I don't give a fuck. If the other stalls are in use, I will take the spacious wheelchair accessible one.
Oh, you have
to. If some dude comes in a wheelchair, I'll be like, you can wait your turn, my friend.
Some of us have large childbearing hips, and, you know, we need that handicap stall bathroom because modern, you know, men's bathrooms, it's just too small.
Yeah, you need the comfort when you're dealing with half ply toilet paper.
Yeah, I'm just know that I'm taking notes of all the sinners in this room right now.
You should
all the ableists. That's
fair. That is sinners. Fair. That's fair. Chris, how's things?
Well, you know, this is a night. It's a beautiful night, and they call it a bella notte. How are you, Jacob?
I'm all right. That was pretty good. I appreciate that.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, that's about it. Other than that, I'm sleepy.
That works.
He's not in the game yet.
Yeah.
Just Snow White.
It's been 13 years, and we are just all out of shit to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it. That's why I said it's done. This is it.
Yeah, just
final episode
up.
Right here. It's been a hell of a run.
Thank God.
That's pretty good, dude. That's pretty good.
And to end it like right on the anniversary date would be pretty nuts. But we have an interview tomorrow, so we can't.
Just like Thomas Jefferson, he was born and died on the same date, just different years.
Okay, I was gonna say, was he zero when he died?
Yeah, everything else he did was as a ghost.
What a life!
History books do not tell you that.
Yeah, you weren't there. You can't disprove that. What I'm saying here.
Yes, I can. He was born on April 13th or April 12th, 1743. He died on July 4th, 1826.
Okay. Well, maybe it wasn't him. It was one of those old fucks.
It was somebody. Somebody throughout history has died. And
yeah.
Famously.
Died on their birthday.
If you tell me what your birthday is and for correcting me, and you're going to die on the anniversary of your birth. I'll tell you that right now.
That'd be kind of cool.
Oh, God. Could you please?
On it. I just got to get a lot of motivation to do anything first.
All right, got it.
If I do.
Hold up. James Monroe, born March 4th, that was his tenure as president. What the fuck? Never mind.
I think maybe the fact that you're looking for is that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on the same day of July 4th, but it was the same year, too. But they were aware of it.
And then also, James Monroe died on July 4th, 1831.
Oh.
And that's why we celebrate 4th of July.
Turns out in pre-modern times, July is not a great month to be alive because it's just too hot. It's kind of like how a lot of people die in November, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my family dies in like December through February. We call it family planting season.
Yeah, I was going to say. And if they don't, I'll make sure they do.
Right?
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. I think I found out why I sound weird. Apparently, the volume dial on my headset works even if I'm not using it wireless. It was like up to max. That explains a lot. Craziness. Total craziness.
Sick.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep. Definitely random things to talk about. All right.
So what have you guys enjoyed about doing this dumb show?
And three coming games.
On and hanging out.
Well, games. There. Games and making fun of you, dude. Pretty much.
I got introduced to Ryan, so, you know, that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is cool.
That's one of my least favorite things. I thought we were doing that part next. The least favorite part. Now this is awkward.
Jacob sucks.
Least favorite things. Yeah, having to meet Jacob.
I've gotten to put thousands of hours in my life that I could have been doing anything else, but instead played solitaire.
That was your decision, really.
No, I failed.
And that
I was peer pressured into it.
That not only was your decision, it was a bad decision. So,
well, definitely it was bad. But you ever seen a sad Joe? It's like a three-legged dog. It's like just so pathetic. I couldn't tell him I'm not playing the solitaire game.
I had a three-legged dog as a kid. Her name was Shayna. I loved her. I used to sleep on her tummy.
Cute.
Yeah. He was a white pupper. So that leads to... Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I got a cat with three legs, but also a fourth one.
Aha.
Nice.
I had a slightly deeper response. Actually, I gained some confidence back as a speaker and like being in front of people. Like, it's weird to say because I also stream, but I actually like am kind of shy and don't come out of my shell that often. And so like the first time I came on, I was super nervous and talked really fast and didn't make a lot of sense. And like, I feel like I progressed through a lot of that and like that gave me some more confidence again. So like,
yay.
Thanks. Yeah.
Bree was just like, oh, wow, these people do a podcast? I am so much more talented than these fucks.
Oh, which I will fit in here fair. Perfectly.
Yeah.
I'm going to stand out. I will be the shining beacon in their pile of shit.
Known and as she is.
The shit mound lodcast. I don't know.
I wish I had the ego to think that way. I just don't.
Well, it's okay. I have the ego to see it that way for you. It's fine.
And she has to see it that way for you because she knows that she can't see it that way for herself.
This is, no, that's like 100% true. Out of everyone on here, Bree is the most well-spoken out of all of us by a very significant degree.
True. I second that.
Like professional and kind. But Chris, I think Chris is the most knowledgeable when it comes to retro gaming.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just didn't stop playing them.
That's fair.
We're looking up absolutely everything about them from like the 1910s till now, apparently.
1910s. Yeah, it's
ball and stick, like hoop and stick. Is that what we were playing in 1910s?
I have no idea, but I guarantee you Chris does.
Hoop and the stick.
No, I
Marbles, I don't really. Jacks.
Hoobastank?
Yes, Hoobastank.
I've been playing Hoobastank.
I knew it.
Oh, the reason was you, Barry.
Yeah. I got a good one.
I'm crawling in the dark.
Turn the light on.
I was going to say, I liked coming on the SML podcast because not only the games and get to hang out with you guys, but I would say it kind of like fueled my like a new passion for like covering games. Like I don't know. I never thought I would do game reviews or anything like that, you know? And so obviously Joe, you gave me a chance to pop on and be silly in here, but I thought it was really neat getting a lot of these titles and trying to figure out like what they boiled down to, you know, whether it was, you know, just like a game similar to this or like kind of what set them apart from other games within the same, you know, like category too, which was really fun.
Yeah, for me, it's probably legitimately the games, but not because, oh, free games. It's, I never would have even heard of like 90%, if not more, of what I've ever played if I wasn't working here. And that's given me a lot of extra games that I'm like, holy shit, this is really cool. Like, I would still be basically playing only AAA games that I would buy like one or two of a year if it weren't for here. Now, almost everything I play is indie because they're so much better. They're so much cooler. They're so much more well-made. Like, I never would have had my eyes open to any of that, and I never would have been like, oh, yeah, I want to give back to the gaming community, because I would have been like, okay, this is trash. Next trash game, I guess. And that would have been my entire existence.
And I actually notice when I go into other streams or if I'll raid someone, they'll be like, oh, well, what games did you talk about tonight? And I'll list what we talked about. No, they're like, knows. I didn't hear of a fucking one of those.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we got a Purnell here. Purnell has made it. Mr. Purnell, how are you doing? Welcome up, to buddy? The anniversary where no one knows what the fuck to talk about.
I mean, what's there to talk about? Everything's the same. Not.
I actually did have a question for all of you. Since 13 is an unlucky number, what game would you consider was the unluckiest one you got stuck with? Like, what is the worst game or worst review experience that you have had in your time here?
Oh, God.
God, that's difficult.
Too many to count.
For me, the problem is
too many to count.
My worst reviews. My worst review experience was not from this show, and it is so bad that it took over every other thing I could think of. But I can still mention it because it is that bad, and I'm almost positive we almost got it for this show. And I was like, no, don't want it. It was called Tokyo Tattoo Babes, and it was on the PlayStation Vita. Remember the Vita? Most people don't. But I do, because I love that machine. But it was a horrific game that should have been so much better than it turned out to be. And the thing that made it worse was it was one of those rare reviews where I had to write paragraphs about it. So it wasn't as easy as talking about it.
One.
I had to write it, made it way worse. But it did allow me to become very, very good. Gave me time to think about some great ways to talk about how much I hated it. So it balanced out. But no, it was not a good game. And it wasn't helped by negative. You know what? I got one. I do have one for this show. And it's recent. And the thing I was about to say about this game applies to that game, too, which is that Away From Home game I reviewed a few weeks ago. That counts because it's the biggest thing I didn't like about it, from what I remember saying in the review, was the fact that it was one of those games where they advertised how grand and great it was going to be. And then it gives you just enough content to go over the hour limit before you cannot, so you cannot return the game to Steam. So you're stuck with a piece of shit.
One.
Like, yeah, that is just, oh, that's horrible. You were expecting that Gilson be Pontus, but no.
You were pleased with that one.
Like, I'm happy to get it because I was able to not spend the money on it. It was a $25 game that I actually was comfortable paying. I was like, I want to support this developer. He was like, you want to review? I was like, sure, I'll review it. And I'm like, thank God I reviewed it. Came my money back. That's how bad it was.
Aki, what about you? Worst game you ever covered on this show? Oh, wait, she went to get food. Bree, worst game you ever covered?
All right. So I don't know if this is the worst one, but this is the most memorable one for me. And I just went and looked it up in Discord because I half remembered what I said and I used it to search. It was called Panic Porcupine. It was similar to like Sonic. Right. And what I specifically said to you was, it's not frustrating in the Meat Boy way. It's more like a physics puzzle of a platformer, and this one fucking pole mechanic can get it shoved right up the dev's ass for them to sit and spin on. Nice. Yeah.
Ryan, I know you've really only done a few solitaire games, but any special highlights from your time hanging out with us?
No. As far as the games, it's mostly been solitaire. Just a lot of fucking solitaire. I don't know why I keep saying yes to the solitaire.
Because they keep making them.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
My wife thinks I'm insane. Because she's like, I know you love video games. You own literally thousands of them because they're taking over our house. Why are you always playing fucking solitaire?
So why are you?
The classics.
Because we already went over this. You guilt me into it, Joe.
That's right.
So you weren't available one time and I played a solitaire game. It was like Pretty Girls Solitaire Plus. It was boobs and like,
I approve.
Costumes. Lucky. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure Chris had a few that. Of those on the Switch too.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad I didn't get to play that because I would have gotten nothing else done.
Yeah. Yeah. My it wasn't son bad.
Would have starved. I would have missed all my gigs. It would have been a nightmare.
I generally enjoy the Pretty Girls games.
Yeah.
Anything you They're didn't enjoy, Chris? What's on the bottom of your list?
This little bag of Doritos I just ate. There was like almost no powder.
Oh, very sad.
That sucks.
Yeah. But no, video games are good.
Nice.
No special low lights on this show that you've had.
Well, there was. There was that one game, Grim Shade, that like kept crashing and I couldn't play it. And I was like, oh, womp womp.
Yeah,
and then there was another one. There was another one pretty early on the Switch that I still don't think I ever tried to revisit because it just wouldn't work. I wonder if it would work on Switch too.
I'm surprised you didn't mention a Gilson B. Pontus title.
I love Gilson B. Pontus. I think that
Do you now? Wait a minute. Whoa.
We're going to get a new game now just because he's going to hear this.
Now, love is a strong word, I guess. But, like, I appreciate the weirdness of just the existence of him. And, like, and I've gotten so many great, like, stories and reactions out of people, like, showing off his stuff. And, you know, I know that, like, you know, there's people who more popularly trash him on YouTube and whatever. And I find trash talk just kind of boring. But also, that's kind of what he brings is a legitimacy to, like, well, you know, this may be bad, but it's not Gilson B. Pontus bad. And, you know, to quote a friend from earlier.
Damn.
So I don't know. I kind of appreciate him setting the bar as low as he did. It really puts things in perspective if you think about it.
You're kidding. You seem to not have like a grisly bone in your body, my friend. That is positivity incarnate right there. Because like for me, a lot of it comes down to it's not just you know. Game is bad or whatever, because I generally will say like most games are at least decent, but to start with the idea of how bad can a game be, the first question I have to ask myself is, would I spend money to get it? And certain games, even if I were flush with cash, I would not buy them.
The difference between you and I is one of financial responsibility in that you can think in those terms, whereas I'm like, the reason I go to work and you know, have a job and earn money is to spend it then on video games. So
especially bad ones.
Respect.
Yeah, bad ones, good ones, whatever. You know, whatever ones cost money, that's why I've got it. So
I do have to ask, and I know Joe's like, more bad games, but I have to know. Here's the last question, and I'll stop derailing. So, knowing now that you don't buy based on a general sense of, will I enjoy this game or not, what is the base level model that you go into and you say, I'm going to drop cash on this, and we'll see how it goes?
I assume it's literally... Does he have it or not?
that's a lot of those.
And even that's not a deal breaker. Like, I don't have I don't have it for Steam, so I can get that now.
Yeah, no, look at my Dragon Quest collection to know whether already owning it is a detriment or not. That's very deft, actually, to
hey
say.
Joe, how many times did you buy the Pixel remasters? I don't want to talk about it.
It's funny that we actually know.
Many times.
We actually know what he means exactly when he says Pixel remasters. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's, I love that. I love video game shorthand that's like that, you know. I love the shortcuts we take in our brains. And and just instant recognition. Anyways, it's literally just, does it look interesting and can I afford it right now? So if the answer is no to the first question, usually I'll pass it by, or just like kind of note it. If the answer to the second question is no, then I put it on like a wish list or just note it again. And yeah, no, that's pretty much it. Just, does it look interesting to me right now and can I afford it?
Andy, what about you? Worst game that you had to cover for us?
I was thinking the first game that I ever covered at first. If you remember, you gave me a game called Priest Simulator.
Oh god, that doesn't sound good at all.
It was the very first game I jumped into. I remember everything that like transpired that day too, you know, and how we met and everything. But you gave me a game.
I'll never forget that day.
I'll never forget it. Yeah, exactly. But you gave me a game and I was like, oh dude, I'm excited to like review it. But you gave me a game called Priest Simulator, and it was essentially just like a, I don't know, you're like a vampire who becomes a priest to like save this town. I don't know. I really hated it, but I actually like it grew on me, you know, the more I played it. So I can't say that one. But I do remember there was one called Mad Devils that I actually had you, I think you and I were like hanging out in a Discord call together and you were watching me play. But in that one, you're like special forces. You're like a special forces squad who die and become demons, and you're trying to hunt these Nazis who are like embracing some occult, you know, like behavior. And I don't know, it was just weird, but I kept dying in the game, and it wasn't like, you know, optimized well. Like I kept falling off the map in random spots and just getting caught in between, you know, areas that like didn't even exist like in the rest of the game. So overall, it was just like not a fun experience. And I believe you came in and you were just like, dude, this game kind of sucks, man. So I'm going to say that one for sure. But I don't know. There's been a couple of them, you know, that I've kind of jumped into and I'm like, ah, this game is not what I thought it was, or it's not as cool as I thought it'd be. But they kind of grow on me. But this one definitely did not grow on me. This one grew away from me.
I think the two that are stuck with the most stinkers are probably Jacob and Aki, because those are the two who will always say, oh, if no one else will do it, I'll take it.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that has led to a lot of regrets.
Jacob and Aki.
We how many bullets you for that.
Have you jumped on that you regret, and which was the most painful?
Oof, a lot. And oh god, what's the answer to the worst one?
You know, the funny thing is that like when you started asking like everyone, like, you know, oh, what was the worst game that you've had to play on here, I panicked because I've had to play so many shitty games
that you can't remember which one's worse or any other names.
It's just like as soon as that review was done, oh, like off of my Xbox you go. I'm never touching you again. I'm never thinking about you ever again. Like you just become one of the 4,000 Xbox titles.
Those are bad games. But when there's a worst like, game, you remember that one.
Like,
there's a couple that I remember that I'm like,
here's the thing, like the like worst games for like for me, like were like before I was even reviewing on this. Like anytime anyone ever asks, like, oh, what's the worst game you ever played? Like, there is an old ass Xbox game called New Legends, and immediately just like my brain immediately goes there. Like, even though I didn't have to review it for this, but as I was saying, like, so I panicked and like went over to True Achievements and like I started going through like all of like the games I've had to play over like the last few years. And it's just like so many of these things, like I've got like half of the achievements for the game. I don't remember what the hell these games are. Like, so of the three that I did remember that I was like, oh my God, these were absolute dog shit.
Oh, before you get to them, to build suspense, quick shout out to Injury for the sub. Jordan hit us with the sub before we went live as well. So thanks to the both of you for dropping subs in here for our anniversary episode. Hilariously, right now we are at 13 subscribers. So that's fitting.
No one's allowed to leave or join anymore now. I will
kill anybody who joins after this. Okay, Jacob, you're bottom three, I guess.
At least for right now. ACL Pro Cornhole.
The game has
18 unobtainable achievements.
Was that unattainable at launch?
Yes.
Oh, it
will never get fixed. They don't care. They don't ever reply. It got released 3 years ago.
The worst part is they used to be like close with our show. That's Farsight Studios. They used to do Pinball Arcade.
And the thing is that like that game opened up my eyes to a number of things, including the fact that there are pro cornhole players out there and like there are companies that like regularly sponsor this shit. And I was just like, what? And
yeah, I
wish that the game actually didn't suck because like,
yeah, I have a comic buddy who tours with the pro league and he kind of like MCs events and stuff like that. It's a niche but a big enough thing where he can make a little money off it. It's wild.
Oh, I believe it.
If people are willing to sponsor professional cornhole, we should have sponsors everywhere. Why aren't we sponsored?
So there's that Green Soldiers Heroes Extreme Bikers, which. Like it was just like a motorcycle game that like was also supposed to be done with army men and it just absolutely sucked balls. Yeah. And then Skull Island Rise of Kong.
Oh. I had a feeling that was going to be on your list and I couldn't remember what the name of the Kong game was. Yeah.
Very good.
You know, we're going to give you all
you get the Hobbit of the group. Or Gollum.
I got Gollum. Yeah. That was pretty ass. Yeah. Still not the worst game I've played.
So what is?
Oh, well, there's Superliminal, which I don't know if I did for us or if I did for IGT right near the beginning of when I was working at
I love
both.
That game.
So I hated every second I played with that fucking game, and I was so hyped for it. I went out of my way to go get it. I was so excited. I hate that game with every fiber of my goddamn being. And then there's the Kimco RPGs. They're just not for me. I've not particularly cared for a lot of them. They're fine, but it's just like I find them so boring.
They're fine.
Yeah, these are not bad. These are dog shit games.
What is
games,
the
though?
Worst Aki?
Superliminal. As I said, Superliminal.
Bad game. Like if you go on Steam right now, it is overwhelmingly positive.
And every last one of them is fucking wrong. Fucking hate that goddamn game.
Like, we're talking legit dog shit here. Like Gollum.
I like Gollum more than I like Superliminal. And Gollum is pretty god awful. Then that hunting game, I don't remember what that hunting game that I was stuck with. The one that was just too realistic.
That's a better answer than fucking Superliminal.
No, that's a fucking trash game. There is no game like that I hate more than Superliminal. I am not bad at puzzles. Salty,
they couldn't figure
it out. It really just sounds like you're bad at games.
Yeah.
Get good
puzzles
scrub.
Is one of my there were no few boobs areas. That's why.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's no boobs. That's why Aki failed.
That's fair.
You know, that is fair. You know, fine. Fair enough.
We figured it out.
Titties. I might as well chime in with one, too. I'm going to go very old school. It is the only interview that we've done that has never released because of tech issues. And they decided that they didn't want to come back and do another interview. And it turned out the game was absolutely garbage. And that is Frizzy. Old Xbox One game. I don't know if anyone might remember Shizzy Hollywood. He used to go by Shiz Blacka. He would play that. And I remember when it finally got some kind of patch that you could collect one star over and over and over and over and over. He tried getting to the max stars achievement and it still like cut off on him and couldn't get it. And it's just an atrocious game. I don't know if anyone has played that one, but Andy, I think I got that one for you on Steam.
Which one?
Frizzy.
Frizzy. Let me look it up. I feel like you, that sounds really familiar, but
you haven't played it yet. You should play it right now. You
absolutely did.
Play it live. This
looks atrocious.
Play it live. It looks like it was made in Windows 95 Game Maker.
It looks like somebody just like, I don't know, threw a rock at a computer and said, that's a game.
I think it was Chris and I that did the interview. And after we were done, we were like, man. Oh,
I don't remember that. Oh,
what do we do? It? Nah, Chris yep. Huber.
Oh, okay.
Chris Huber, yeah. And we were just not sure what to do. And then the recording file, when I imported it to Audacity, was corrupted. And we couldn't salvage it. And it wasn't on Twitch. Because we weren't doing that back then.
Damn.
Yeah, so it was lost. Lost and gone forever.
Thankfully.
Into the ether. Yeah. What about highlights? Anyone have a highlight? And then we'll wrap this up and I'll let everyone scurry on their way.
I mean,
what's your favorite game?
It's been really cool being brand ambassadors for Outright Games.
Very true.
I mean, I've gotten free kids games for like the last like 3 years, which as a parent is amazing.
Yeah.
Because also a lot of those games are not 5-star.
There's some good 3.5s in there, though.
Oh, yeah. There's like a
fours.
There's a lot of solid kid games, but yeah. As like overall games.
You're not going to see Jeff Keighley announce their name on stage.
One day.
Game of the year.
Talk about Louis Chicken Run Night Train. Or the Elf on the Shelf Christmas highlight? Heroes.
That was unique. I was going to say the next Paw Patrol game, whatever it is, that'll be game of the year.
Yeah, I think one of the highlights has to be thanks to Chris and his finding of Mr. Nameless Reporter who overused.
That was unique.
Yeah. Aki, you keeping up with these? Aki. Mm-hmm. She mentioned
boobs and she got distracted probably. Again. She'll be in a trance for a good 20 minutes.
She heard Unique 4 times and just went into a coma.
Just a little bit. Yeah. You know, I didn't have an aneurysm or anything. No.
That's good.
Not trying beautiful. To figure out how to murder you in your sleep or anything. Nope.
Oh, I'm easy to find. Just hide your hands. They'll do it.
Yeah, he's fat. He can't walk far.
Nope.
Not he's in the all. Hotel room right now.
Jesus.
I got a highlight, which I thought was cool. One of the last games that I reviewed was the Yuka Replay-Li, which I've always been a big fan of Rare, and obviously when they switch over to Playtonic, you know, and stuff like that too, I was pretty stoked. But Yuka Replay-Li, when it originally came out around my birthday. I remember getting it back in 2014, I think it was, or 15 maybe. And my dad had come over, so I have like a good memory like tied to it. My dad came over and I was playing it and just kind of like talking to him about, you know, the company and the game and like everything, you know, that I had known about it at the time too. So I like to attribute that as like my first live stream between myself and my dad. And then getting to play it all these years later too, and getting a copy for a review was just kind of like a obviously hit of that nostalgia, but also just like a fun time to jump back into the game and relive some of those memories too, which was nice.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I think one of my big highlights of the show has been meeting you, Andy. Meeting Bree. Never met either of you before this show.
Hey, really?
You're both cool. Ryan, thanks, I never met you before doing this. Purnell, I met you at MAGFest. Chris, I met you at MAGFest. Jacob, I've been stuck having to know you from fucking Redners.
Well, what are you gonna do?
We met at MAGFest too.
Yeah. But did you meet at MAGFest before you came on the show?
No. But we met in person at MAGFest.
Yeah, we met in person. Bree drove by and dropped by here a couple of times on some of her road trips. And it's just cool getting to meet you folks and meet new people and get new people on the show and talk to new people on the show. And like, shit, in a couple hours, we're going to be doing an interview for Carmageddon. That's cool as hell.
Remember, Carmageddon is back.
In POG form. No, in digital form still.
I wish it was in POG form. In the interview, ask if they're going to release Carmageddon POGs.
I will.
And then really press them on it until they agree
to do it. Like, you don't understand. That is the way you make a proper comeback. Man. You don't just release a game. You release POGs.
The game Destiny Connect TikTok Travelers Special Edition came with a set of POGs.
Oh, nice. Good. I thought you were going to say that was one of your highlights, which would have also been appropriate.
No, I had to buy that game. I didn't get to review it. But I bought the Special Edition, and sure enough, it comes with POGs.
Now, can you review the POGs for us right now?
I'd have to go to the shelf and get it.
Much work. No.
They're not just readily available? I guess that means 2 out of 10. If they were great, you'd be holding them right now.
Inaccessible pugs.
Much like that Ryan's balls.
Bulletproof logic.
Yeah, my balls are 10 out of 10 because I'm holding them as we speak.
Luckily, the game's good.
Can't argue with that logic.
Jacob backs you up on the 10 out of 10.
Mm-mm.
Because he's backing you up right now. Like the scene from Ghost, it's together. Cupping gigantic balls.
Yeah, putting my balls on the potter's wheel. Not a good idea. Very painful.
Ryan just goes spinning off. Like,
yeah! It just kind of gets like wrapped around in there like a taffy machine getting clogged. It's horrible.
It's like, all right, well, it looks like I'm ready to be Mr. Fantastic stunt double.
Oh, God.
Patrick Swayze's ghost is like, I'm getting out of here. This is what I thought was going to happen here.
So is that the high note that we ended on? Ghost pottery balls? Ghost balls?
Yeah. A more highlights. Any about that's pretty good.
I got a highlight or a few. Brie. I mean, like,
me too.
I need to head out.
Same here.
So. Okay. Have a good night, folks.
Well, Jacob, you have a highlight before you bounce.
I did. I said
an ambassador. Anything else, though?
Yeah.
You know.
Meeting Aki. I knew that was your answer. See you later, Jacob.
She lights up my light. All right, Bree, what do you got?
No one quite like she does.
So yeah, I mean, like, I've gotten to play some really cool games, some that I wouldn't have, you know, been able to get on my own, and that's, there's like a lot I could name that are really cool, but kind of, I think some highlights for me are also doing interviews. That's not something that I had ever gotten to do before, and they're not always fun for me, like, because I'm just not into the game or whatever, but there have been some really, really cool ones, and again, it's one of those things to, like, stretch my skill set, and I appreciate that. But specifically, I would say the Cat Quest 3 interview was like my favorite. That was just a really good interview. I had a lot of fun. But yeah, I enjoy coming up with questions for the interviews and just kind of like seeing what's out there and doing something besides just the reviews. Like that's a highlight for me.
Ironically, almost all of my highlights also have attached interviews to them, and I don't even like being part of the interviews because I feel too self-conscious.
Yeah.
So what are some of your interview highlights?
Honestly, for me, it's because they're attached to games and combined reasoning. Tacoma, I really liked the interview with those devs, and the reason for that is because in that game, there is constant use of sign language, and that's like that was really cool to me, and I absolutely love that. And then there was the interview with the devs of The Veil, which was the game made that was for people who were completely blind, so it had
no graphics or anything. Steam.
Yeah. No, that one was on Xbox. I think it is on Steam, too. Yeah. But we got it for Xbox for me, the review. And that, to this day, is still one of my most favorite games of all time. I absolutely adore it. And I'm still sad that they are never going to make a sequel to it. And Hellblade, Senua's... which one was the
Sacrifice?
First one? Was it Sacrifice?
I think it was Sacrifice.
Yeah, those three are like my highlights, and it's because of they display disabilities within them or have a highlight of something that would be something that people who are disabled would understand. Like in Tacoma, by all technicality, no one's deaf in it, but sign language is used constantly anyways, and I really like that. And Hellblade is all about schizophrenia, and I really liked that. And then obviously the audio game is about being blind, and I am blind, so I really like that. Like, those were really awesome, and being able to talk with the devs of two out of the three of them was really cool.
I was
going to
say, we only interviewed two of them.
Yeah. But all three games were highlights for me, and it's because of that. Like, I absolutely love that kind of stuff. That's really cool, and you don't see it often enough.
Ryan, what are your highlights about being interviewed on the show?
I don't know. It's fun. It's you know, it's one of those things that I've done a lot of interviews, and they're still cool that anyone ever wants to take the time to interview me, considering I'm at best a JV celebrity. So it's nice to that
people on NBC. That's like,
yeah, but it's been a while. It's been a bit. I was most recently on CBS. You didn't interview me about that. Just saying, no big deal. I'm not mad.
Are
you joking or serious?
Were you on at midnight?
Yeah.
I want to know, why were you on CBS?
I'm a comedian. I was on Comic
Relief. You're so damn funny. It all makes sense now.
You didn't know that this whole time?
Hell, I know. Yeah. I've told you catch him when he plays in that area.
Yeah, the reason that I think Joe probably first became aware of me on the True Achievements website, they found out I was actively on America's Got Talent, and they interviewed me and kind of did a whole thing on there. And yeah, I'm like I said, I'm a JV celebrity.
I started talking to you because of Carnage. He was like, hey, why don't you try asking this Ryan guy? He goes by Cripple Threat. Why don't you ask him to come on the show sometime? I'm like, what does he do? He's like, oh, he's a stand-up comedian. He was on America's Got Talent. I went online, watched your shit. I was like, oh, my God, he's way too funny for us. Like, there's no way he's going to slum it on our show.
That is very true. Yeah,
if you ever find your way to Philly or Wilmington, you let me know. I'll come check out your stuff.
Where at?
Philadelphia or like the surrounding areas.
Okay, yeah, I'm working on those dates right now for later this year. Joe's seen me. I'm pretty good in person.
Was it out in Jersey? I went to go catch you.
That one, yeah, I think
down in Hanover.
Yeah,
yeah, Purnell. I asked you to go up because we were meeting with Big Adam, and I mentioned to you that you should go up to Hanover and meet with us. But you had shit going on, I think.
Oh, that's where you were going to see him.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's in here. His name's Ryan, by the way. He's really funny. Yeah. He's a comedian.
Yeah, oh, what's up, dude?
He tells.
See, this is where it's humbling you.
Funny. I've been.
Yeah. Ask me what it's like to be interviewed, and that for a brief moment made me feel like, yeah, I'm kind of a big deal. I've done a lot of stuff, and then people on your show are like, "Who the fuck?"
Well, to be fair, I kind of isolate myself from most shit, I try to anyway. So I miss out on a lot of like buzz.
No, it's a very yin yang thing here. You're keeping me humble. That's all it is. So I don't get too big for my britches.
Yeah, that would be a thing because if you come on here one day and we got Crippled Thrutter, yes, right, kiss my fucking feet, bitches. You're in the presence of royalty.
I always talk buttholes with Jacob.
Yeah, that's the eyebrow stuff I do.
That's how we keep Ryan regular.
I want there to be at least one person who's like, oh, I loved him on America's Got Talent. What's he do on the show? Mostly ass play. Mostly. Mostly that.
A little bit of pot.
I saw your stand-up, and you talk about your dick quite a bit, so.
My dear.
Dicks are
man.
Funny. Yeah. Andy, you've joined a handful of interviews, haven't you?
I've been in an interview here and there, yeah. I'm usually just hanging out in the background there. I don't know. Like you'd have to give me the list of interviews that I've been in too. I mean, I think what one was it? What's the one we did pretty recently, the like Platypus Reloaded or whatever it was called?
Yeah, Platypus.
That's what it was.
Reclaid, yeah. I thought that one was pretty cool just because I got a review copy of that too and played around on it, and I just thought obviously the clay style was pretty neat, so getting to talk with that guy and figuring out how like he made the game and like then remade the game too was awesome. So
he reclaid the game,
yeah. Indeed. So yeah, I thought that one was fun. I don't remember. I don't know. I've been on a handful here and there, so I couldn't go back and be like, yeah, I really liked this one. So.
Chris, any interview highlights?
Yeah, I'd say the Platypus Reclaid is a good one. Yeah, I generally like just talking to anybody about anything. Speaking to the folks at or the guy at Incubate is pretty nice.
Yeah, that was a fun one, talking about getting homebrew onto physical consoles and dating back way, way back when we first had limited run-on before they kind of blew up in popularity and then decided to fuck over Xbox with every release they decide to do anymore. Oh, my God. They suck with Xbox now, but...
Gotcha.
If I had to pick a favorite interview I've done on this show, I will always, always go back to the Ball Squad episode, because to my knowledge, it is still the only time that there was a show that had Pinball Arcade and Pinball FX reps on together talking about pinball.
Yeah.
And because Pinball Arcade is basically dead, that's never going to happen again.
Ooh.
Ball Squad.
That's unfortunate.
Ball Squad.
Yow.
All right. With that, I guess I will let Bree, Ryan, and Andy get on their way. I want to thank you three for hanging out, being here, keeping us company on the anniversary episode. The rest of us have reviews we got to do. So unless you want to hang around, you're welcome to. It's up to you.
Yeah, I got a tip.
Yeah, my kid's like, all needs to go to sleep, and he wants his dad in his life or whatever. It's really a bummer. So I'm gonna go do that.
Lame.
All right, well, right. And Andy, give us final words.
if Godzilla's ever chasing you, make sure you hide in a bunker.
Bree, final word.
Gundam chicken wings. I got nothing.
There.
You just Ryan. Yum yum chicken wings. That's a great thing.
Is. Ryan, wrap it up for us.
If you're gonna play, make sure you ass play.
Make sure you ass nicely.
There yes. you go. All right. Thank you.
We'll see y'all later. Have a great night.
Bye.
Later, guys.
Peace.
Have a good night, everyone.
Oh. All right. Y'all ready for reviews? I didn't say for this.
Sure.
Y'all ready for this? Okay, let's get some metal playing.
But to answer your question, yes. Wait a minute, that's not metal.
I think it is. It's chicken metal. It's fine.
I feel lied to.
I mean, if you want the real metal, well, I mean, I can.
Okay, that's more like it. That's what I was expecting to hear.
But then we have...
See, what I was hoping was when you said, okay, I'll give you the real metal, I was hoping you were going to play a sound that was just a bunch of silverware, like falling against a piece of metal or something, just to fuck with us.
I could do this, though. Does that work?
Hell yeah. Yes, I love that.
First game to talk about tonight, I Hate This Place, developed by Rock Square Thunder, published by Broken Mirror Games and Feardemic, released January 29th on Series X and S, Switch, PS5, and PC for $29.99. A craft-based isometric survival horror game with twisted monsters and warped reality. Scavenge and build to survive terrifying days and nights while using stealth and noise to fight enemies that stalk by sound. All styled with bold comic art in an 80s horror vibe. Purnell, Aki, both of you played this one. Purnell, start us off. What's going on in I Hate This Place?
So, I Hate This Place stars a girl that goes by the name of Elena, or Elena, or however you want to pronounce it, who is coming back to visit her family's haunted farm with her friend Lou. And their intention from the very beginning of the game is to pretty much summon a demon to get answers about where Elena's mom went, where she disappeared some years ago. Things go wrong very quickly. Lou disappears, and then Elena is now trying to find her friend and also gain information on the original quandary that brought them out there in the first place. And that is the setup for I Hate This Place. Apparently, it's based off of a Skybound comic. I kind of wouldn't mind reading the comic, because right off the bat, one thing I want to mention that is probably not a big deal to comic readers, but as a person who's not familiar with the comic, I hate the fact that this character does not seem to react to anything negative that is happening around her. Like, the game starts you out dealing with like weird, you know, bunkers with scientific remnants of potential conspiracy crap, you know, alien tentacle crap and monsters and demons. And she's just like, eh, I wonder where Lou is. I guess I'll just keep walking or whatever. But,
hey, maybe
just she's off.
And that's seen some shit in her life.
But that's just the setup
with help gone to that, high
which
school,
I don't have because I didn't read the comic. Oh, no, high school is not that bad now. Now, if you throw an onion at me, that's another story. Fuck that. But, like, that's just to make sure that I'm not picking on this game. That is a general pet peeve of mine across the gaming sphere when characters don't seem to appropriately react to the situations they find themselves in. But beyond that, the game is best to be described as a survival crafting action adventure title, because you are exploring the grounds. You have the means of firing firearms, which you can, you know, craft using blueprints you find across the map and the materials you also find on the map, and of course the ammo that goes along with them. You have melee attacks as well. And the blunt, all those things are extremely ineffective against the monsters you fight. If you need to use them, you better be ready to burn through some goods and get good at dodging things, because they are bullet sponges. Most of the monsters in this game can eat some shots. So avoid combat if at all possible. And the game kind of incentivizes you to want to do that by crap giving you the means to do some stealthy, you know, maneuvering. You can push a button to go into crouch mode and sneak about. And the game is typically on the mind of showing you how much noise you're making by way of comic book text that appears beneath the character's feet, indicating crunch, thud, squish, squish, and other various sounds, as well as having it be enlarged or, you know, decreased in size based on how much noise you're making.
And
enemies
color.
That notice you. And color, that's true. And if enemies notice you, they come a running. So generally my rule of thought is keep a melee weapon for like gross bugs that can actually be killed with little damage or whatever. And then keep a lot of guns and ammo on hand, but then hope I never have to use them because it's going to be a doozy if I do. In addition to, you know, having the weapons and the firearms required or the bullets required to run the guns, you also have a stamina meter. So run and swing too much and you'll find yourself tired and ineffective. You also have a hunger meter. And as you play the game, you will walk around and exhaust yourself and need more food to get that hunger meter back up. If you fail to get it up to the point where it eventually drains, well, you find yourself in a comfortable condition, such as you might have like a reduced health or stamina meter, health decreases, that kind of thing. But ultimately, you just don't want to run out of hunger. You don't want your hunger meter to deplete. So eat potato chips and cans of beans and whatever else you can get your hands on or prepare to stay in the game. There are some base building elements that exist in this game as well. Eventually you find your way to the farm before you start to sprawl out and exploring various areas around the surrounding the farm. But while you're at the farm, you can use materials you found while exploring to create. First, you have to basically destroy debris that's kind of cluttering the zone up. But then you can also build structures that can be used to kind of assist you with further crafting. Like you can build a structure that produces additional wood, for example, or rags, so you can like have better access to making Molotov cocktails. And getting those things, of course, requires you to explore the world at large and deal with all the monsters and all their gobbledygook. But one thing worth noting that I should mention is the fact that the game does run on a day-night cycle. And the game will run that clock that works with that, even when you're talking to people, even when you're in your inventory. Short of you straight up pausing the game, the clock is ticking. So be mindful of that when you're talking to NPCs. But the reason why you want to be concerned about that is, well, the most obvious thing is certain missions can only be done during the day or others at night. But in addition to that, at night, monsters are tougher to kill. Or maybe not tougher to kill, but they're just all over the dang place. They're more aggressive. They're more prevalent. And you have very, very poor vision. And given how some of the map layouts exist in this game to be kind of, you know, I don't know, just intentionally mean to mislead you as the player, you really don't want to be stuck in those environments in the middle of the night, which is hilarious since some of the missions require you to go out into those environments at night to suffer. But,
yay.
I mean, like the game can't be called I hate this place if there aren't, in fact, some places you come away hating. So there you go. I hate the forest. I'm trying to think, like, if I'm thinking about something I want to comment on, but that will give me the opportunity to let Aki do some talking here. If I can think of something jump in.
What do you have to chime in with?
Okay, so as mentioned, the enemies are bullet sponges. A part of that reason is because they have weak points. And kind of the problem with that is the weak point is always on their back, and you can't really get around them once they know you're there. So you better destroy that thing real quick so they take maximum damage and die. Because the moment they turn and face you, you're just going to be hitting them from the front from that point forward, because you ain't getting around them ever. Which kind of
that is correct.
Sucks. Because even once they're alerted to you, unless you leave the screen, they don't get unalerted to you, which is pretty misery inducing.
Follow you forever, no matter
what. Something we should mention.
As long as you're on that screen, yes, they'll face you, face whatever direction you're in. The AI pathing isn't very smart, i.e. it doesn't have any AI pathing. So let's say there's a U-shaped room in there and it could get out through the top. Well, once it's alerted to you, as long as you don't go up to where the big old gap is on the other side, where there's a missing wall, it'll stay in that room because it can't get out, because it just keeps facing you and walking straight towards you.
Beautiful. So yeah. These are monsters that can't see, but they could track you once they've alerted you once.
Yep.
They could still somehow track you.
Yeah, it's very irritating like that.
Something to mention that as a lot goes along with what Aki just mentioned, I just thought about, is that the game doesn't do any sort of resetting or even like self-existence when you're not in it. And what that means is that if you find yourself running from a monster and you decide you need to transition to another room, hope you don't have to come back because the monster will continue to wait for you there as if nothing ever happened, like you never left the room. And the moment you come back, he's like, oh, let's resume the last state of the room that you as you were in it. And that creates some issues when you're trying to actually be evasive and go from zone to zone or whatever. So be mindful of that.
Yeah, killing things is kind of difficult in this game because of that. Because you have to destroy their weak point, which for massive kills
damage.
Them.
God damn it, I had to say it.
And,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and also keep in mind, some of the monsters don't have weak points. See, like when you're in the night outside in the woods and stuff, those bugs and deer don't have weak points. They're just being dicks.
Yeah, this just is true. Douches. See, there are some areas that I really don't like in the game. Again, big forests because they're big. It's just too much, I think. Whereas, like, in most of the other places, you're in buildings, and basically any door you come across, when you go through that door, you're in another zone, basically. You just move, okay, this room's loaded, okay, now this room's loaded, now this room's loaded. And in the forest, instead, it's just, here's a big fuck-off-sized area, figure it out. And I don't think this game is very good at having the player do that. Instead, you're just aimlessly walking around until you find something that's hopefully what you need. Whereas, like, when you're in buildings, it's very clear what you need because, you know, there's locked doors and you have to go the other direction to unlock that door, and then you can go through it. And it's, you know, even if there's four pathways there, you can only go one at a time. And then you open another one and then open the next one, so on and so forth. Yeah. So they're really good at that, but they're bad at, like, the more open areas because they have no way of letting you know, oh, you need to go fuck off that direction to get shit done. Fuck off.
Let's talk price on this one. It is $29.99. I am looking on Steam, at least on this platform. Until the 12th, you could get it for $23.99. But for the full price of $29.99, I need some verdicts.
Well, I'm not going to go so far as to say that I hate this place, hence the title. But I also don't love this place. It's more like I like the place, and I'm willing to give it more time and play more of it. But at the same time, it does have some annoyances to it that might turn off a couple of players here and there. So I can't give it a magnanimous buy it, but I can give it a genuine try.
I am much of the same thought process. I think it's a try it just because, again, there's areas that they do really well and areas that they need to do a lot of work on for their next game, probably. So I think it's a good solid try it to me.
I'm looking on Steam. It looks like a lot of the reviews come down to, I really wish Steam had a better review system than thumb up or thumb down.
Yeah.
Because, like, people want to go right in the middle and they can't.
So, it's one of those times where, I mean, I don't like numbers per se, but that's why I like that there's at least the try it element where I can say, here's a try it, but I can kind of add a little words to say, try it based on these conditions.
So, all right, Purnell, scale 1 to 14.7. Give me a verdict.
17.2.
That works. Next game to talk about, Dragon Spira, developed by X-Create, published by Kemco, released February 6th on Xbox One, Series and PC, Switch, PS4, PS5, and Steam for $19.99. 1,000 years ago, the Divine created the world in 6 eggs. Eggs. Nice. The beings born from them, spirit beasts, were entrusted with prosperity but rebelled because they wanted omelets. Enraged, the divine sealed them away and vanished, leaving behind humanity, the divine sword, the seed of hope, and a side of hash browns. Now fate stirs once more as a new hero rises. Chris, tell us about Dragon Spira.
And I'm hungry. I'm gonna go have some breakfast for dinner.
I know, right?
Okay, so yeah, Dragon Spira is the latest in a specific subset of X-Create games, a specific subset of RPGs published by Kemco. So, you know, we're getting in deep on this one. So basically, you got Kemco, right? They publish, I would generously say, like, a lot of RPGs. And X-Create is, like, kind of like their main developer. These are games that largely started on mobile and then just kind of got ported to other systems. Some of them are quite old. You know, by the time they reach these newer consoles, nothing you can do about that. But this one is actually very new. So X-Create within itself has a specific series of 8-bit style RPGs, even though they're more like 16-bit, but I mean the art style is very, you know, it's chunky. Much more old school looking. Yeah. Chunky. And they all have Dragon in the name. So it started with Dragon Sinker, which is actually one of the few Kemco RPGs I've actually beaten. And that, you know, that came out on like That's an older one that came out on like 3DS like a long time ago. So yeah, Dragon Sinker, Dragon Lapis, Dragon Prana, and then this is the latest one, Dragon Spira. They're not connected in any way in story. It's more like the vibes and the style is consistent. And, you know, if you know these Kemco RPGs, which, you know, hello, other person. then
hi, I'm here. Yeah.
Then you know, you kind of know that that's sort of their thing, is like, you know, unconnected games, you know, connected by kind of vibes and things like that. Interestingly, Alvastia Chronicles is not considered in this series, even though it does have the same chunkier pixel art style, but I guess it's just like it's a different type of adventure, and it doesn't have Dragon in the name, so they dismissed it coldly. That's the one where you get to recruit a filing cabinet in your party.
I remember,
or, you know, there's like, yeah, there's like 1,000 different characters you can like recruit, and they get really weird with it. And this one, they don't get so weird. Like, you play a standard male protagonist hero, of course. There's also a second character who is female, possibly a love interest. We know how this goes. And yeah, based on the game's lore, there are, like I said, you know, 1,000 years ago, the divines created humans and eggs, or existence and 6 eggs, half a dozen eggs, specifically, not even the full dozen. Anyway, you presumably early in the game come across 2 of these eggs, and from them hatch 2 beautiful ladies who are also in your party. One of them has the energetic, sort of like food motivated anime lady trope, and the other one has the, you know, more ascetic, quieter, not a tsundere or anything like that, but just like, you know, the more studious, magician kind of trope. And then, one of them is a little like fluff ball in a hat. That one, you hatches from an egg a little later, and his name is Uv. I guess that's supposed to be kind of like an egg pun. I don't know. But this is your motley crew. And yeah, you basically just go around.
You see Dr. Feelgood? Oh, man, yes. I got to kickstart the heart of this joke.
Keep it going. There's more Motley Crue songs.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. There
is this game filled with girls, girls, girls?
Yeah, there you go. It actually is, yes. I mean, the scales are tipped to the feminine, even though, like I said, your main character is a guy, but that's, you know, again, this is not abnormal for this kind of game. So yeah, basically you go from town to town, you go and do the local dungeon. The story is pretty cool, actually. It's full of mystery and intrigue, and, you know, you do seem geared up to be going off to fight God and stuff like that, which is great, because, you know, we love to see that in an egg-based adventure. Although, I wish it was more literal like that, like Hanjuku Hero, which, you know, literally has a superhero egg in it. But anyways, I digress wildly. I gotta... so anyways, yeah, you basically, the fighting system is very, very, very similar to things that we've kind of seen before. Your characters have...
Would you say the battle system is the same old situation?
Oh, is that more Motley Crue? Because you're getting into songs I don't know now. But I have to say, like, okay, so you have your regular attack with your regular weapon, right? Your equipped weapon. And we'll get into... weapons later. Well, there's not much to say about them, but anyways, you also this game does have a job system, so you can change the jobs of any of your characters, and those come with job based skills that they can learn and acquire, and so you can kind of build your party out that way a little bit. Rather than introducing more characters, they just let you customize the characters you've got, a la Final Fantasy V. Then each character has unique
as unique. A skill. Unique.
Yeah, there's literally a button on the battle screen that says unique all
that's
the time.
Awesome. And
when you push it, then it pulls up your character's unique skills. It says that right at the top. So that I love that that's come full circle for me in this, that the game itself is like unique. then there's Wonder Skill, which you can actually, so the Wonder Skill is just like a super attack. The little bar at the bottom raises throughout battles, and once it gets up to the top, you get a nice cinematic kind of almost like a summon spell or like a limit break kind of move. So that's really fun. But yeah, it's just, you know, your characters and the enemy stand side by side on the screen, and you just got, you know, your options to go through. And you can change the difficulty, but I think it starts only with easy and normal. And let me tell you, easy is extremely cake. You may actually not want to play this on easy because it's maybe a little too much. So especially given how many ways there are to overpower your characters. Dragon Sinker definitely also had this kind of thing, but they've really ramped it up in this game, and so this is going to be the rest of the review, is just talking about the different economies of this game.
Oh, geez.
Okay, so first off, you have gold. It's for buying weapons and armor. Who cares? You can also buy weapon or items. Again, nobody cares. You're going to get all this stuff for free eventually throughout the game. Then there are the crystals, which are... those are basically for gambling. So this game does have a gambling system. It's called item exchange. Well, no, they have item exchange, so you can straight up purchase things with the crystals. Like, those, that's... almost every X Create game has that. Crafting, quote unquote, is the gamble system. It's where you craft by spending like some of your things, and it just like brings up a wheel and spins it. And I'm like, this isn't crafting, this is winning.
I see something on the store page with like a wheel you spin and it's a departure board, and I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, we're gonna get to that. So crafting, like, that will get you, like, really, really special weapons and armor at the cost of, you know, 100 crystals per spin. And randomly, in any battle, no matter how easy, you could get a minimum of 10 crystals. So you'll be spinning this wheel often and getting overpowered stuff. Then there's Chance Wheel, which refills once a day. That is to say, you can spin it two times every time the date changes on your Switch. It seems to be broken because I've done it six times now, and five of those times I got the bottom prize, except for like one time where I got the grand prize, which, by the way, is 5 premium tickets, which just lets you spin the crafting wheel instead of spending crystals. So it's just, and I did win some good stuff that way, but you know, that's still very funny to me. And then there's a secret room where you can purchase like overall buffs, like physical damage up, you know, experience up, gold up, at the cost of crystals. And they stack. You can, like, buy different levels of them for different amounts of, like, I think different amounts of crystal. And, you know, if you don't feel like gambling, you just want to make the game easier no matter what. And then there's a one that is unique to this game called Sugoroku. Sugoroku is a mini game, kind of a board game, a little bit like the one in Dragon Quest V and later 3, like the remakes of 3. You'll kind of recognize it, but basically it's a board game that comes up. You get RP, which is a whole different kind of point that you get out after battles. I don't even remember what it's called. Roulette points or something? I don't know. And so with those points, you can then spin a wheel and then move a certain amount of spaces on this board. And every time you cross something like HP 20, Strength 8, Speed 6, MP 16, you know, it'll add those numbers to a pool of stats that you can then, once you get to the end of the board, distribute to your other characters. Either evenly or dump them all in one character. The game does not care. The game is very generous with these RP points, and in fact, it's kind of annoying that once you get enough to start spinning the wheel, the game will then ask you if you want to play Sugoroku right after you. Anytime you gain RP after that, so you know there every are battle
entirely
is
entirely like, too many currencies in this.
Yes, they're like, you want to play some Sugoroku, right? And I'm like, no, and. By the way, even if I do want to, the cursor is by default on no, so if I'm just mashing A through the battle, which does happen sometimes, this is an RPG, I will accidentally skip the Sugoroku, and then I just have to go into the menu and play it from there, and I'm kind of like, well, what was the use in asking me then? so, that's a... And that is not to say, as well, that there's also... a prize system. So we've talked about the prize system in or the achievement system that is in some of these Kemco games. It's where you get like item rewards for doing certain things, and at the beginner level it'll be stuff like check the option screen, check the help screen, spin the chance wheel 2 times, you see unique skills 15 times, and you know, and it keeps awarding you prizes, and like you just get so many notifications. It's like you just got your Gmail hooked up to this thing, which is to say this all makes the game very addicting and kind of elevates it beyond like what it is, which is to say a pretty good RPG. You know, nothing extremely special, but then again, I haven't beaten it. Because, like, you know, these games do actually tend to stay pretty engaging as you play them, and this one seems to be no exception. I certainly want to see how it pans out. But, yeah, I mostly am getting bogged down in all of that. Plus, there's more! There's also side quests, and there's a guild which has further side quests. Like, basically, this game is, like, for the fact that it only has, like, the typical... microtransactions of like you can further double up like your experience, even though you can already do that within the game. You know, it has the X create set of like different purchases you can, DLC purchases you can make. You know, there's no, it's not like it's running ads, it's not like it's like, you know, free play that is, you know, needs to keep you addicted. Oh, by the way, one more currency, fruit. So your friend, your little furball friend with a hat, grows stronger by fruit that you find just on the world map and in dungeons and such. And so you just passively collect them as you walk over them, and they're random. They're completely random in what they are and where they are. So as you walk over these fruit, then your little guy gains levels and becomes more powerful. And there you go. The end. That's all the currencies I know of in this game. But yeah, it's like...
2 weeks later. Really, well, I have an update on the currency situation.
Yeah, I'll come back on the show and talk about further currencies that I find. But yeah, I think the game stands on its own. But yeah, what really kind of keeps it going, I think, is just the animal urge to just keep pushing these numbers up and getting more rewards.
All right. Well, it is a $20 game, which is the current going rate for Kemco titles. What are your thoughts on Dragon Spira?
I think it's the best one yet in the Dragon series, especially considering Dragon Sinker is a little messed up on the Switches and stuff. They took the Game Boy resolution and just made it sharper, so the character sprites are huge. And it's actually kind of uncomfortable to play on like a TV because everything is just too cramped. The other, you know, Dragon Lapis and Dragon Prana definitely fix that. But yeah, no, this is the latest and greatest as far as I feel. I think the game was came out in Japan only last year, so it's
you know, I have a question for you.
Sure.
How many currencies do the other games have? This you labeled like 6 or 8 or something for this game. That's insane. How many are in the others?
I would say the average X-Create game has at least 3. I would say that maybe on average 4 or 5 is a pretty good estimate. I would say 4 maybe is like the total, like this is pretty typical.
And we thought AAA companies had too many these days. Holy shit.
Yeah,
I was going to say, this game is...
Ubisoft, nothing on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, and this game doesn't make you sign into Kemco, like, you know, before you get to play it.
K-Play.
K-Play. That sounds naughty. I think this game is kind of a standout. I think they've actually really pushed the envelope in terms of, like, different kind of currencies that you can obtain in the game.
I think they did a little more than push the envelope. They basically fucking nuked the country at that point. Jesus.
Yeah, because you gain 4 different kinds of points at the end of battle that it shows you. Like, you know, we didn't talk about the points as much because there's, like, job points as well as experience points, R points.
Holy fuck.
And then, of course, gold. Well, we talked about some of those, but yeah, there's even more.
They could have brought it down to, like, 3. XP, gold, and one other currency. They could have just left it there.
They could have, but they didn't. So
they should have.
Oh, shit for you, Augie.
It would be funny if they actually did that. Like, you know, like experience and gold, sure. But and there's just one other kind of currency, and it works for every other thing. So it's like it works for Sugoroku, or it works for spinning the wheel, or it works for...
Yeah, you can just get people more of it. And have it spread across multiple things. That would be so much easier.
Interestingly, yeah, it'd be like an arcade, you know? On Xbox, I could see there is a special edition of the game that includes the game and all 4 of the different DLC bonuses, like the triple experience, the triple job points, double damage. So I think you end up maybe saving a buck if you do it that way, but the game itself is still $20.
Honestly, like, yeah, purchasing DLC is, of course, your own business, and you can have your own opinions about that. But I will say, this game's easy mode is so easy, you are not really going to want to, you know, just spin the wheel a couple times, get a overpowered sword, and you'll burn through everything. It's like, and they, you know, some items will have, like, the ability to strike every, you know, thing on the field, you know? Like, yeah, this game...
Overall sounds like a good one.
I like it a lot.
Cool. All right. Well, Chris, that is it for you. We will let you get going so that you could get back to what you are doing over there and playing with your kitty cats. Give them all scritches for dinner. Us.
Yeah. All right.
You have any final words before we let you go?
I don't know. Play more video games.
That works. Take it easy.
Good night, Chris.
Good night.
Good night indeed.
Next game to talk about, Look Mom, No Computer, developed by The Bitfather, published by Head Up, released January 22nd, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. Brace yourself for a wild ride where music meets mayhem. Look Mom, No Computer takes you to the quirky pixel art universe of Soddersworth as you join Sam and his synthesizer sidekick Cosmo in this twin-stick shooter action RPG to battle rogue household items and fix them from inside, one electrifying beat at a time. Brunel, what is going on in Look Mom, No Computer?
So in this game, well, you play as the aforementioned characters, Sam and Cosmo, and
at the very beginning of the game, it is established that Sam has created Cosmo and has given him the ability to allow them both to shrink down and enter appliances, which is immediately appropriate because there is a weirdly evil corporation that's currently taking up shop in town. And ever since they showed up, people's electronics have been acting really weird, and people want Sam and Cosmo to help them fix their stuff. So what ends up happening is that as you'll walk around town, and also including Sam's shop, you will be able to enter appliances. The appliances themselves represent various dungeons that you can explore, including their own types of enemies and locatable objects you can seek out and discover and whatever. As you're exploring this environment, you will come across scenarios where you have to fight enemies, as you would in a literal twin stick shooter. Your arsenal comes in the form of two things, active abilities and passive abilities. And the way you get these things is by actually equipping synthesizer mods onto Cosmo. Everything you put onto Cosmo will in some way, shape, or form impact the music that is playing in the level which you are exploring at the time. So I guess the best, simplest way to describe one of the things would be, I think one of them was the equivalent of like an air horn or like a synthesis, like a metronome or air horn. And it would play in a syncopated beat on cue, on a rhythm. Depending on the level you're in, it might be not so much an air horn, but it might be like a chime or something. But it would play this sound on cue. Well, not that badly. That would make... Ah, God! I'm going to kill you! Oh, God! Just to confirm, the game does not sound like that. Good God, I would tell you not to buy it immediately if it did. But no, it does not sound like that. It does align with the music you're playing. And there's different components. If you're familiar with synthesizing, you're already kind of aware of what kind of sounds you're going to hear in the music as you equip the objects. But each one might be, for example, you might have one that fires a pea shooter gun and another one which might fire a concussive laser. And each of these active abilities, when you use them to attack, will heat up. If they get too hot, they will overheat and you'll be unable to use that weapon for a short period of time. Good thing you can equip more than one weapon. Passive abilities are things like maybe having a shield that will be on display on the screen that can recharge after a certain amount of time after taking damage onto it, and other such things. And you'll want to equip all these objects as best you can by increasing the capacity of Cosmo so you can equip as many as you can, and then switch and mix and match as necessary. These things can also be upgraded as well, but the upgrade in this game is not the same typical method of just going to a store and spending the money on Model 1 to make Model 2. Instead, as you're exploring these different locations, you will become acquainted with the denizens of these environments, and they will ask you to do certain things for them, such as liberate a certain area of the device, or look for their friends who are lost in the device, or any number, defeat enemies in a certain amount of time. There's a variety of different tasks. But once those things have been accomplished, you will go back to them and receive an award. And it will usually be either a specific mod, flat out, or the blueprint to produce copies of that same mod. The other way to get these objects is by exploring the environment and finding various artifacts that are hidden throughout the levels. There are a lot of them, like over 100 of them, in fact. And as you find them, they will accumulate, and then you can go to your neighbor's house in the real world, and he will actually sell you he will basically run a diagnostics for you. He will produce copies of these things that you've already found if you so want them to. And he will also unlock slots on Cosmo so you can equip more things. And he will also increase the energy capacity of Cosmo so you can equip things of higher energy usage. Frankly, this is a game I've been eyeballing for a little while because the trailer for it on Steam is actually very engaging. It has the guy, I'm assuming the actual person who created the game and responsible for all the synthesizer components and the sounds they make, comes on and is like, all right, guys, we're going to go and fix some computers. Like, every time I see that commercial, it always makes me smile. And the computer comes with, let's play! Like, I am very happy to see that every time. And fortunately, it's also the opening of the actual game. So that's pretty cool. And Cosmo will talk here and there as you're walking around the environments, too. I do feel as though this game does warrant the anticipation that I had to give it a try. It's pretty fun. In fact, the only real gripe I had about it was the fact that it's also a positive as well as a negative. But they keep that in mind. But since the music and the way it sounds is associated with the things you have equipped, you might find yourself with a specific item where you go, this could be good, but it sounds terrible, so I'll never use it. In my case, I've had scenarios where I've had the active items be like two things that sound good, and the most powerful weapon at the given time sounds not so great for that level I'm in. So I'll switch to it just to attack enemies that I need the extra firepower for, and the moment it's dead, switch back to something that sounds better. But
you need, I think, a that's a small gun.
Honestly, don't put it past them. I'm just doing too much. But it's honestly really cool. Like, I think creative usage of audio like that is exceptionally fun. And you can even tinker with it in Sam's shop, where you can just equip different synthesizer mods onto Cosmo on the synthesizer machine in the house and just play around with the different sounds and see what you can produce. It's a lot of fun. And I think it's very creative. I wish more games got that fun and that fast and free with the audio in the game and have it be associated with the player's actions. That's not very just cool. A typical rhythm game.
I think this is one Carnage had his eye on too, because he loves his twin sticks. The store page asks, will you repair the machines, conquer the bosses, and restore harmony, or lose the beat forever, Purnell? Game's 15 bucks. Did you lose the beat, or is it worth 15? What do you think?
I think it's worth 15. Get your ass in there and save the town.
Very good. Any other thoughts?
None. That's the one that matters. Buy the game. It's good.
Rock on. Next up, The Perfect Pencil, developed by Studio Sema, published by Studio Sema and Doyoyo Games, released January 29th on Steam for $24.99. Last in the Kingdom of the White Beast, will you find your way out? The Perfect Pencil is a story-driven action platformer that throws you into the innermost depths of the human mind. Navigate surreal worlds punctuated by bizarre personalities, tense boss battles, and secrets. She's waiting for you. Aki, how often do you hear the term "she's waiting for you" and not act on it?
Never.
Yeah, so she's waiting for you. What did you do?
No, I went to her.
What'd you do?
Not much. Okay,
did you find her?
No, I did not.
Uh-huh.
No. So in this, you play as a little headless thing. Maybe person? I don't know what the fuck you're supposed to be. And a guy puts a camera for your head and is like, okay, go explore, have fun, do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. You're not my problem anymore. So you head out, and now you are camera head number one, I guess. And you can use that camera to light up the area around you as well as to scan things. I am not entirely sure what the scanning actually does, but it does alert you when there are things around you that haven't been scanned. So go scan them anyways, because,
it's part of the game. I'm going to take a guess that you have scanned everything you can, because I just saw your playtime in this game.
Yeah. No, I'm not even close. I don't think. Probably.
Oh, my God. I know what you've been playing all week.
Yeah. I may have...
Sounds like a perfect pencil to me.
May have gone a little overboard with this game. You're playing as this little dude. You're scanning things that you find in the environment. Thankfully, there's a little alert thing that pops up in the side of the screen that starts blinking a little faster when you get close to things that you've not scanned before. It also pops up after you've scanned them, but it's a different color. Instead of red, now it's green. I don't know what any of that's for, so I just say, okay, and I scan it. Otherwise, you are fighting different people thing kind of stuffs. This is super surreal. So, like, some of the enemies you first fight are people who run around on all fours with a birdcage over their head. Some of them are people sleeping inside of pillowcases and they drop from the ground, and if you get too close to them, they'll kick their feet out or pop their head out to headbutt you. Why? I don't know. there's a whole bunch that... Just assume after I say something, I don't know, follows it. Because that's the entirety of this game is... This happens... I don't know. you do quests for some people who don't seem quite as far gone in certain ways. No. And sometimes they'll give you like different upgrades that allow you to move around. Usually they give you this little green energy thing that you can use to buy stuff from the merchant who put the camera for your head. So yay. You get different abilities. Like I got a dash recently, which was nice because you can immediately air dash if you want and stuff. Haven't gotten the double jump yet. I really want a double jump. And yeah, you're beating people up and stealing the green monies things from them and moving on. Whilst you're doing this, you're also occasionally finding puzzles that you get to solve. Some of them require you to interact with other characters, and you overhear them say something, or sometimes they're the objects that you've scanned. You'll get pictures occasionally of the objects you've scanned, and if you do, they'll solve a puzzle fucking somewhere. Because I went through one area, one of the first areas I went to, found some pieces that gave me photos. Didn't use them for like two or three new areas before I finally got to that section. Yeah, and I don't mean like, oh, two or three screens. No, I mean entire different biomes. And then I finally got to use it, and I was like, oh, that's what that was for. Only like 12 hours later. Okay, cool. I'm glad these are in here.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at the Steam page. Some of the, I think the major complaint I'm seeing is the healing system.
Oh, it's abysmal. Is there a healing system? I don't think there is a healing system. I can't remember ever healing. I just remember dying. Oh no, you get to charge up a special type of attack that if you hit an enemy, you get a charge of your health back. You get three of these special attack charges. One of the key problems is you have to hold a button to charge. And once it's charged, then you have to hit an enemy within a certain amount of time. Because if you hit nothing, you lose that special charge, don't get any health. And if you don't get to an enemy, so you don't even attack, you use that charge and it fades. And it's still gone, and you get no fucking health. Also, later on, you get special attacks that you can equip, and those use the same fucking energy, and there's three of those. Oh, and you have to charge them up. Yeah, and you charge them up by beating on enemies, but you have to hit them for, like, three full combos to fill up one of those bars. And you start off with three health. One hit... period. Even if you just land on an enemy and they don't even attack you, your hitbox enters their hitbox, you get damaged. You lose an entire health every time. So you start off with three health, three charges.
Let's voila. Get good.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Or die a lot like I did. Yeah. I died so much. You do eventually increase how much hit points you have. I haven't found a single increase for how many of my special I have. So now I have like five health. I can only heal three times still, and it only gives me one health a heal. So it's like, fuck my life, I guess.
Yeah, they could probably rework the healing in this game. Otherwise, the game visually looks great. I like the style of it. Does the combat feel okay? That's the other complaint I saw, was the combat felt slow.
I don't particularly care for the combat for some enemies. Some of it's fine because you can jump around and dodge enemies, and that's great. But some of the enemies move so fucking fast. And you're given like this ability to where like you can hit, and then if you hold the button down, you can charge up a stronger hit. Good luck finding an enemy that isn't going to beat the shit out of you by the time you've gotten that charge done. Because if they hit you, it prevents you from charging. I've found exactly zero enemies that allow me to use that. they'll hit me beforehand. It's like, the fuck is the point to this ability?
You could.
This is pointless.
You could.
No, you it's not could. About getting good.
You could.
Because if you, because when you're charging, you have to stay still. And that includes for your special one that gives you health too. You have to wait until it's charged. And for damn. The heavy attacks, which is the charged one, you can't move around. Once it's charged, it automatically goes. And while it's charging, you're stuck in place. If you jump, you lose the charge. If you let go of the button, you lose the charge. If an enemy hits you, you lose a charge and health. So fuck you.
Timing is important.
Yeah, let's talk price. That's the big problem.
Walks in $24.99. What are your thoughts?
I know there's masochists out here who really like rage games. If you do, this is probably a game for you. Because this
is deck verified, so Purnell's going to buy this one.
Yeah, this game is.
I'm considering it.
It's extremely unfair. Have fun, Purnell. It is a very cool game. It is extremely surrealistic. I really like the visual design. The gameplay, though, is where I have problems because it just doesn't work very well. So I think if you're a rage gamer, totally for you. If you're not, take a look at it. If you think it might be something you like, I think it's a try it, but it's on the lower end of try it. So, yeah, just take a look at it. If you're like, well, this seems like this could be up my alley visually, then go ahead and give it a try. If you're like, if you look at this and you're like, eh, well, the gameplay sure shit isn't going to change your mind, so probably a pass for you. But I think it's a low end try it at least, bare minimum.
All righty, let's move on. Tropicalia, developed by Paolo Henrique Roncaria, published by Rat Lake Games, released January 22nd, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. You'll play as Kaike? Purnell, do they say the name in the game?
Hello? Nope. I'll read it and hope you got it right.
Yay, a brave warrior whose girlfriend is kidnapped by an evil god named Tao. Collect materials to craft new items, grind through fast-paced battles, and test your strategy against challenging bosses. Hunt, fish, swim, dive, jump, and explore the jungle. In this fantasy game, you won't find dragons and elves, but you will face Kurupiras and Boitatas. Colonel, what the hell are those?
Moitatas. That's all you need to know. So Tropicalia is an interesting game in that it invokes the spirit of an old classic, that classic being Dragon Warrior 1 or Dragon Quest 1, as it were, in that you are always going to be by yourself. You're one guy, you against nature and the world on the quest to save your dearly beloved. And this is done by way of an RPG adventure where you are exploring the continent of South America until you eventually find where she's been taken and rescue her. As you're walking around, you will come across various enemies on the map. Not visually, they'll just pop up if you walk in tall grass or in caves and stuff. Think like Pokemon. And when you engage these individuals, you will be tasked with battling them. For the most part, your structure or list of options are very straightforward. You have your attacks, you have your defend, and you have your techniques. However, the interesting thing about this game is the way in which, one, you use your attacks and defense, and also how you gain tech. Go with the attacks first. So, two things. One, enemies, when they attack you, they can be blocked for reduced damage, but there is no gauge you can watch or anything like that. Instead, you can press the button when the animation of damage over Kaike connects, and you'll get it that way. So it's all about visual cues and just noting when the attack does its strike. And if you nail it, you'll get it right. When you attack, depending on the weapon you're using, you'll have a different sort of like mini game, whether it's mashing the button as fast as you can or timing your button presses to pull it off. And every weapon you get, as you find them, are breakable. So, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on what kind of gamer you are, there's a durability gauge that exists with all the equipment. So, you might find yourself going bare-fisted more often than you might like otherwise, just to conserve your goods. Or you might find yourself fighting an enemy that looks like it's a little stronger than you'd like it to be, and you might just come for the heavy hitters to get it out the way. Now, in regards to tech, you can actually get new skills by way of getting SP by defeating monsters, and then resting at campfires that are littered throughout the map, and then spending those SP for various things, such as you might unlock a category of attack that might involve, like, you know, riskier biz. Like, if you do this, you might miss more often, but it does a lot of damage. But you first unlock that tree or that list of abilities using SP, and then you can spend more SP to buy skills that's underneath that. In addition to that, then you might also be able to use those skills to purchase survival skills. So, for example, you might find yourself wanting to fish. Well, you can't fish at the beginning of the game, but eventually you'll gain the ability through various other upgrades to buy the ability to fish. And then you can fish and catch actual fish, which then can be cooked at the bonfire using crafting to give you healing items. And this goes for pretty much your attack items and defense items, too. You gain the ability to craft equipment to bolster your defenses and to replenish your attack. But you have to actually gain the ability to get the items that you'll likely end up using in crafting. But you'll also sometimes get it as drops from monsters, or littered hidden, like lying on the ground as a nice little shiny, or even in treasure chests that are littered throughout the map. I kind of found myself initially not feeling particularly drawn to it, but I wanted to give it a chance because I like the idea of this being like a game that's more like flashing a bit of attention to South America. And I'm kind of glad I did, because I mentioned earlier that it kind of harkens back to what Dragon Warrior 1 was like. And frankly, I'm okay with it. I like the idea of playing those old style games and hoping for the best as far as like my character goes, like fighting one-on-one and knowing when to pick my battles and when not to. And what I mean by that in this game is, since you can't actually see the monsters until you encounter you, you might say, for example, find yourself walking in a cave, come across a freaking boar. That boar beats the stuffing out of you. Maybe you shouldn't be there. And if you're lucky enough to survive the fight, you might turn your butt around and wait till you're a little bit stronger until you've crafted some good items to go back and give it another shot. But it's honestly a surprisingly fun game. Thankfully, unlike with I Hate This Place, there's no hunger meter. So food is used just to heal. Crafting items are good to just have your equipment, but I don't have to worry about managing a hunger meter. I'm just playing basically an RPG with some survival game mechanics. And I can appreciate that. In fact, can't think of too many games that did that kind of thing, where it's not a real survival game, but it just incorporates survival game elements to give it its own unique feel. Unique. I think this game is a lot of fun. I think this game is pretty cool, and I think it is worth people giving it a try to. Hopefully you don't find yourself getting, you know, tired of the gameplay mechanics, like, you know, this style of thing. But again, if you were able to play through Dragon Quest 1, you can play through this. So I think this is worth trying out.
It is a $15. We can't call it a JRPG. I guess we'll go BRPG for Brazilian.
There you go.
$15. What do you think?
I think it's a solid try on the high end of the spectrum.
Very good. And a Boitata is a fire drake. So learning things today.
Oh, I should mention that too. They do have a glossary in this game. When you come across different things that are like in the native language, you can go to the glossary, look it up, and it will tell you what things mean.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, I love when games have that shit. That makes it so nice. Because then you get to learn little fragments.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up. I think
they did a really good job with this. Now I'm done talking.
Okay. Next up, Tearscape, developed and published by Nerds Takeover, released February 2nd on Steam for $14.99. As a hunter, you explore a dark, interconnected world filled with dungeons, relying on precise combat to survive. Battle grotesque monsters, expand your arsenal, and uncover hidden paths in a nonlinear pixel art journey. For now, when you're not bottling the monsters, how is battling in Tearscape?
Well, I'm not bottling the monsters. I'm clearly drinking the monsters. Jesus, Joe.
Are you more of a canner? Do you like to jar them?
I like to jar them when I have a moment, when I have an opportunity, I will say. I'm fine with jarring them. How do I feel about this game? Well, the best way to describe it right off the cuff is to say, have you ever wondered what it would be like if The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening and Bloodborne had a baby? Chances are you never wondered that, because who the hell would have thought about that? Well, clearly this guy did, because he made a game that is exactly that. And to be quite frank, I wouldn't have expected it to be good, not by a long shot, even being a person who likes, you know, 8-bit games and classic style titles. And I would have been wrong. Old Purnell would have been stupidly incorrect with that statement. So this game is legitimately freaking awesome and unexpected.
Just curious, when I offer this, were you like, this looks like shit? Give it to me.
I'll be honest with you. This was one where I didn't say it looks like shit. I did go, what the heck is this? Like, I wasn't expecting a ton out of it, but I also was intrigued. Because, again, I never thought about this being a thing I would want. But seeing that somebody did, I was like, huh, let's see what this is like. It's worth giving a try. And I am glad I did. This game is the bee's knees. It has the cryptic-esque exploration that you would get from a Bloodborne / FromSoft game. So you're exploring the world as a hunter, trying to vanquish enemies nasty monsters and creatures. And you interact with NPCs as you explore the map, sort of having relations with people as you go around. Like, for example, you may come across a character who offers you items as a reward, but you can only take one, but you are able to take both. Do you take both? Because he might remember that if you do. That sort of thing. But as you're exploring these areas, you have the ability to strike with your weapon. You have a roll ability. And off the cuff, those are the only things you can do. But as the game progresses, you will gain other equipment. So, for example, the attack weapons, you start out with a cutlass, and that cutlass has a cost to your stamina and the amount of damage that it does. Did I say stamina? Yes, I did, because I think, with the exception of one game I reviewed tonight, every game has a stamina gauge. In this game, obviously, it's going to have one, because if it's emulating Bloodborne, then, well, yeah, of course you're going to have stamina. And everything you do will burn that stamina. Attacking with a weapon, rolling, blocking, using tools. Yeah, I'll get to that. But that is the way in which you will engage with the game and, you know, utilize equipment. So, with that said, you will find items like this throughout the exploration, whether it's rewards or secret items or just found in a chest on the ground. Lucky you. And you can equip them to do different attacks. Like, and they all kind of have their own unique attack patterns, or behaviors, which is kind of cool that they were able to make that work in a game like this without the 3D frames. But they did that. You'll also, as you explore the map and engage with your mission, come across dungeons. Here's your Zelda portion, and you'll be exploring these dungeons, solving puzzles, defeating monsters, eventually finding a tool or dungeon item, if you will, which can be used to progress further in the level or in the game and eventually used to fight the boss of the level. But like a Souls game, the bosses in this game are dicks. they can be pretty aggressive with the patterns that you need to learn and understand, and knowing when is a safe time to get in and do that damage to them, especially knowing that your rolls and your running burn stamina, which you might not have leveled up. You better have leveled it up. So things to consider about that. As far as leveling up goes in this game, yeah, you probably guessed it already before I even said it. You beat up enemies and collect the game's currency, take them to bleeding, crying statues, and then when you use those, you can rest to recover all your health and stamina, but at the cost of all the enemies on the map respawning. Or you can also go into a menu there to spend those items to level up one of four stats, being like stamina, attack, skills. I can't remember what the fourth one was. Man, I'm so smart. There it is. I have the game open. I can just look. Vitality, stamina, skill, and strength. and I love how the one I forgot is the one that I utilize the most, which is stamina. But yes, I digress. You can spend them there to level it up. You will also gain access to all these things. Will level up more, or it costs more to level up as you increase it. Also, just like a Souls game, so you might not want to, you know, let one stat languish too far unless you just want to be ballsy, because if you feel like you need to start playing catch up later in the game, it will not be a cheap catch up. But this is a game that I would have never expected to want. I want it now, but I've got it, so I don't really need it anymore. I got it. But as for people who do not have it, you might be asking yourself, is this something I should consider? And my answer is very simple. Do you like Link's Awakening? Do you like Zelda in general? Do you like Bloodborne? Do you like Dark Souls? If you like either of those, well, you're insane for one. Don't be like this man. Even if you only like one of them, I think the other might be an interesting spin on this for you to make you want to give it a try. I'm not going to give it a try, though. I'm giving it the other thing, but I won't say it until Joe asks me the question.
Oh, you're giving it deny it, man. I didn't think it sounded that bad. $15 if you buy it before February 9th, you could save 10% and get it for $13.49, but at $15, need a verdict.
Oh, easy recommended on a buy. Pick this game up, even if the environmental puzzles will sometimes drive you freaking batty. It's worth it.
Very good. One final game, and if it's an anniversary, we might as well get naughty, right? Right, everyone?
Why not?
You agree? Yeah.
After dark.
Yeah. Lust Theory Season 3. Sorry, these games get me so flustered. Developed and published by Incitan Games. Released December 19th on Steam for $14.99. Just when you thought it was all over and done with, you wake up on a Saturday morning. The same Saturday morning. Why are you back here again? What happened on Friday? Was it all really just a simulation? Who is Carol? Or better yet, what is she? Play and find out. Aki, tell us about the titties.
They're all fantastic and of various sizes and shapes. So this is the third game, and it seems like this is going to be the last one. Cool, until they make the next game. But that probably won't be in the series. I hope. Maybe. Possibly. We'll see. But in this, so far, basically, you've been Groundhog Day-ing the past few days. And then occasionally, it moves forward today. Don't know why. Don't know what the fuck's going on. You haven't been able to figure that out. But hey, it's moved today. Which one of the times of me reliving this day did it just save? Oh, no. And that is kind of the problem with this guy's life. You get to name him. And he's living with his mom and his two sisters. And so you know what that means. And yeah, he, for some reason, one day he just starts waking up and it's the same day. And he originally in the first game, he freaked out. Now he's kind of used to it. But the problem is, he's gone through this for a couple days in a row now where suddenly it moves forward and stuff. But he lives through like 20, 30, 40 days for every one day that actually moves forward. So now he's like waking up. He's like, oh, it's a new day. Wait, what just happened yesterday? What did I do? Oh, no. Oh, no. And then he opens his mouth, and because he's a degenerate invalid, he can't help but shoving his foot in his mouth and pissing off everyone around him. So that's fun. So not only does he have to figure out how to keep these relationships functioning, he has to figure out what the fuck these relationships even are at this point, because he's gone through so many days, he doesn't remember what he's done in any specific one. So yay, that's fun. But it also shifts, not just through his perspective, and this is brand new, it shifts to another person's perspective. In the prior game, he was led to believe he was more or less in a simulation and they were going to get him out and so on and so forth. And now he's there and he can't find the people who were supposed to help him or anything. So now he's confused. And we see that it almost immediately that, yeah, it seems to somehow be sort of a simulation. Because someone on his block, we get to see through her eyes, which is a brand new thing, and I really like it. And it's a young girl, and she's more or less doing this as a science project, and she has somehow turned the world around her into a simulation, even though she's in it herself. Don't ask. It's complicated. I cannot explain it to you because it's sci-fi bullshit. So, yeah, you're still interacting with many of the same people that you've been introduced into two prior games and seducing them more because until you can seduce them all at the same time, why bother having the day move forward at all, realistically speaking? I mean, come on. And you also get introduced to some new people. Because you're one of the individuals that you've been sleeping with, her mom gets home. Why not go after her too? Why? Because you're a perverted teenager. That's why. Your mom got in a car accident last night, apparently. You don't remember why she was even on the road because you don't know, again, what you did to or with her anymore. And so now you get a couple people at the hospital you get to interact with because why not, you know, bang a nurse that's looking after your mom? You know, that's always going to end well for you. Mm-hmm. Sure. So, yeah, it's fun. And whilst you're going through this stuff, you can find lots of little jokey things that you can get to happen where he pisses someone off and has to run away and things like that. And it's really funny. I really enjoy those aspects to these games. Each one of them has had those aspects where it's just a day where he's like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm so fucking tired of this. And he just goes ape shit, just saying how much terrible things he can get through or how much he can piss people off or he just loses his goddamn mind. And those are, to me, probably some of the most fun parts of this, actually, ironically. Don't get me wrong. The boobs are great, too. But the funny, like, he's gone crazy stuff is so well written. There are some problems with the game. When you're looking through the girl's eyes, there's not a whole hell of a lot of this. It just doesn't really feel like it goes much anywhere, which is kind of a shame because it was interesting. It was different from the other games. I liked it, but it just kind of meandered and didn't really do a lot to further the game at all, which is kind of a shame. And like the prior game, you really need to play all of these. And it's been so long since I've played the second game that I didn't really remember. I was just as lost as this kid was, so that really didn't help. But overall, you know, the animations and stuff are still really well done. I still really like most of the girls. They're all really nice to look at, specifically because some of them have really shitty personalities. But yeah, this is really well made. I really like it, and I am glad I managed to get a hold of a key of this. So,
all right, yeah. $15. Give us your thoughts.
I'm totally for it, and I think you not only should you, but you need to also buy the prior two games because you will not know what the fuck's going on.
Sounds good.
Fun. Yeah.
And with that, we wrap up another year of the SML podcast. Yeah. Anyway, big thanks to everyone who came on this episode to hang out and keep us company. Thanks to you two for being here all the way through to the end. Pernell, pick a song from the one-ups to end this episode.
You know, I can't think of one specific song. Just play a song from a game I like.
Okay, then pick a game that the one-ups covered.
Well, Chrono Trigger.
Okay. Any fun words to end the show?
Like, East 10. I don't know. Be strong. Be there for your family and friends because it sucks. It's going to suck some more, but it eventually won't suck. So we need you around for when it stops doing that.
How about you, Aki? Any inspirational final words?
Enjoy the boobs you have today. For tomorrow, you may not have them, but you may have different boobs tomorrow, and ain't that great?
Ain't that the damn truth?
Could have ended with Pernell.